Welcome to Monday Morning Murder in the News with Alyssa Carroll.
Hello again, heathens, and happy Murder in the News Monday. So, how was everyone's weekend? Leave me a comment and tell me, what did you get up to? If you worked, we appreciate your sacrifice. You guys are like the customer service veterans. Should get, like, medals for that shit, honestly. I did it for, 8 years from high school through a chunk of college working in a grocery store. Trust me.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Right. So I have quite a few for you today. You guys are really coming through with the call to send me articles. This is lovely. So let's get to it. Our first one comes from CNN.com. Title is Mother Wanted in Death of Her 5-Year-Old Son, Who Was Found Inside a Suitcase in Indiana, is Arrested, Police Say. So, a mother who has been wanted by Indiana police since after her 5-year-old son's body was found inside of a suitcase in 2022 was found and arrested last week in Los Angeles, authorities say. Dejan Ludi Anderson, 38, is accused of killing her son, Cairo Amar Jordan, whose remains were found inside a hard shell suitcase in rural Washington County, Indiana, in April of 2022, according to state police. An arrest warrant was issued for Anderson in October of 2022 for the charges of murder, neglect of a dependent resulting in death, and obstruction of justice. Indiana, oh, you and your pop-ups. Indiana State Police said. But the mother avoided arrest for more than a year. Last week, a detective received information from a, quote, concerned citizen that led authorities to find and arrest Anderson in Arcadia, California, a suburb of Los Angeles, as she was trying to board a train on March 14th, police said in a news release. Anderson is being held without bail, Los Angeles County Jail records show. She waived extradition during a court appearance Monday and will be returned to Indiana, said the Los Angeles County Public Defender's Office, which represented her in the hearing. It is unclear if Anderson has obtained other legal representation. Okay, to the dark stuff. The suitcase containing Cairo's body had a, quote, distinctive Las Vegas design on its front and back, and was found by a man foraging for mushrooms in a heavily wooded area, police said at the time. And side note, how many of you have been out hiking? I mean, I love to go for a good walk and like hikes on trails around the lake that I live somewhat near. And I'm sure a lot of you like to go hiking too. You guys ever find like big bags of trash or suitcases and you're like, you know, I would love to go unzip that and have a little peeky poo, you know, a little looky loo. And then you go, you know what? I don't really want to be the one to find somebody's dead body. Like I'm just, and just keep walking. Or am I just a horrible person? Anyway, it says the autopsy found that the child had died from an electrolyte imbalance, likely caused by viral gastroenteritis, according to police. So he died from an electrolyte imbalance from having a stomach bug. The condition is an inflammation of the stomach and intestines that results in vomiting and diarrhea, which can eventually lead to dehydration, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Another woman, Dawn Elaine Coleman of Shreveport, Louisiana, was arrested in San Francisco in 2022 in connection with Cairo's death, CNN reported. Coleman eventually pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit murder and was sentenced to 30 years in prison, with 5 of those years suspended to probation, Indiana court records show. CNN has reached out to Coleman's attorney for comment. So, he died from an electrolyte imbalance caused by gastroenteritis. So were they just purposely withholding fluids from him or something? It just sounds terrible. Anyway, so yeah. And then fled the law for a year. Girl, burn in jail. Honestly. Okay, our next one comes from KOIN.com. KOIN6, watching out for you. And the title reads, man found guilty after 1980 death of Mount Hood Community College student. Coming out of Portland, Oregon, a Troutdale man was found guilty of several charges on Friday in connection to the 1980 murder of a Mount Hood Community College student, according to court documents. Multnomah County Circuit Court found 60-year-old Robert Plimpton guilty of one count of first-degree murder and two counts of second-degree murder. He was found not guilty on two other counts of first-degree murder, but guilty of the lesser-included offense of second-degree murder. Plankton was taken into custody by Gresham Police in June of 2021 and was initially charged with the rape and murder of Barbara Mae Tucker, who was a 19-year-old business student at Mount Hood Community College. Authorities said the break in the case came from DNA technology that was not available over 40 years ago. Boy, do we love that DNA technology. I do. On the night of January 15th, 1980, Tucker was seen running onto Northeast Kane Drive from a wooded area on the west edge of the campus, authorities said. Multiple witnesses saw her but thought she was waving at someone. Another witness saw a man come out from the shrubs and led her back to campus. The next day, a student found Tucker's body in nearby bushes. She had been sexually assaulted and beaten to death. Physical evidence from the scene was maintained, and a recent DNA profile match led investigators to him. In a statement, former Gresham Police Department Chief Claudio Grangine previously said, quote, these cold cases are not lost or forgotten for our department. Each one represents a person to our officers, and their tragic stories are passed down through the generations in hopes of one day bringing honor to their names and a sense of justice and closure to their cases, end quote. And amen for that. He noted the efforts of Detective Aaron Turnage and criminalist Deanna Grossi, who worked on the case for years. Well, good on you. Everybody involved with that and getting that solved. Bravo, honestly. Honestly. Okay, our next article comes from people.com. Title reads, and by the way, this is under the subject of human interest. Okay. So the title reads, missing student Riley Strain's last text message revealed as parents express frustration with search. So this is going to be an article that I got just before. We'll get to that. But this article says, the missing 22-year-old University of Missouri student sent his last text to a woman who apparently had a difficult time deciphering the message. And it says, Riley Strain's last text message was apparently sent to a woman who was checking in on him the night he disappeared, according to loved ones. Body camera footage released Monday showed a Nashville police officer briefly encountering Strain on Gay Street shortly before the 22-year-old went missing. Strain's family is becoming increasingly frustrated with authorities as the investigation nears the two-week mark. So the last text message Riley Strain sent before he went missing has been revealed as the search for the University of Missouri student continues. The 22-year-old student sent his last text message to a woman he was seeing who had asked Strain how he was doing the night he disappeared. In response, Strain wrote back, good lops, according to Dingman. Family friend Chris Dingman. Good lops, L-O-P-S. The family friend mentioned that the woman had a difficult time deciphering the message and even went to the internet to seek clarification, because I would too. In a separate interview, Michelle said, oh, this is Strain's mother, told News Nation she was, quote, not sure who the woman is. Quote, he's got several friends that are female, male. I don't know the individual he talked to at that time. she added. It has been a week and a half since Strain's disappearance. The Delta Chi fraternity member was last seen on surveillance footage just before 10 p.m. that evening, a short time after Strain was asked to leave country music star Luke Bryan's bar in Nashville. He looks tall, just looks like a normal kid. New body camera footage was released Monday of a Nashville police officer briefly encountering Strain on Gay Street shortly before his disappearance. It is unclear why it took over a week for authorities to release the footage. Both his friend and his parents told News Nation they have become frustrated with the investigation, including the delays in releasing certain footage. Okay, so they've not seen or heard anything. It was very frustrating. But then, alas, my friends, there has been an update. So this is coming out of NewsNationNow.com. Title says, Riley Strain, missing Mizzou student found dead. Mizzou is up in Columbia, Missouri, which is kind of almost in the middle. It's just barely north of the middle. It's just off of Highway 70, which runs between St. Louis and Kansas City. Just to give you an idea there. Like Brad Pitt went to college there for a bit. I know, because I'm a Missourian. Moving on. So in Nashville, Tennessee, a body pulled from the Cumberland River in West Nashville, Tennessee, early Friday morning, has been identified as missing University of Missouri student Riley Strain. The Metro Nashville Police Chief John Drake said the police department received a call from a worker at a company based along the river of a dead body at 7:28 a.m. Central Standard Time. The employee was working to remove objects that would pop ashore from the river, a routine job, you know, cleaning up the river and the shores, which is great. When they noticed what appeared to be Strain's body on the river. The police department was also able to confirm Strain's identity when officers arrived. Strain was still wearing his black and white shirt, his Apple Watch, and other identifying objects that helped confirm his identity. Strain's family has been notified and an autopsy will be conducted later on Friday. So he went missing in sort of early March. And he was found, so he was missing for what, a couple of weeks? Yeah, I'd say about a couple of weeks in that river. Oh no. I only say that, like, do the time math and whatnot so we can all get an idea of how possibly decomposed he might have been in the water, bloating and whatnot. So a couple of weeks in Tennessee and it's beginning to warm up. Let's see. Drake confirmed there was no other evidence that suggested foul play. He explained that with cases such as this, it usually takes between 14 and 20 days for a body to surface. Well, 14 had been a couple weeks. Okay. The discovery came exactly 2 weeks after the 22-year-old missing while on a fraternity trip in Nashville. Strain's disappearance kicked off a relentless search in the city, garnering national attention from news media and online sleuths. Multiple search crews spent the last 2 weeks canvassing the river and city for Strain. This week, the United Cajun Navy joined the effort. Drake said the department received more than 200 tips from the public regarding Strain's case. His family had continued to hold out hope that their 22-year-old son would return home safely after he disappeared March 8th. That's the day he disappeared. The Mizzou senior was last seen as he was kicked out of Luke Bryan's bar, Luke 32 Bridge. Although some cameras captured the soon-to-be graduate making his way through downtown, gaps in the timeline of his movements and cameras pointed in the wrong direction made it hard to know exactly where to look for him. Oh, that's the end of the whole article. Well, bless. At least he was found. At least his family has some kind of answers. And that's what we all hope for, right? For sure. So our next article is one that's kind of personal to me, about Lacey Fletcher, the girl that kind of quote unquote melted into her couch. I don't want to be insensitive. But this case has really sparked a chord with me and with a lot of you. I've had quite a few messages, DMs and messages and comments about this particular one that it just really disturbed people. But anyway, so this one comes from people.com and the title reads, Parents, of Lacey Fletcher. And by the way, side note, I've covered her. So if you've not heard that podcast and you want to know more about the story, go find that. It's been a bit. So woman who melted into maggot-infested couch, sentenced to 40 years. Maggot-infested couch. I didn't know it was maggot-infested. So her parents were sentenced to 40 years. The 36-year-old was found dead in her family's Louisiana home on January 2022, covered in ulcers and feces. The mother and father of Lacey Fletcher, the Louisiana woman whose body was found and, in quotes, melted into a maggot-infested sofa in her family's home, have been sentenced to prison. On Wednesday, Sheila and Clay Fletcher were each sentenced to 40 years, though 20 will be suspended. They were ordered to serve 5 years of suspended probation once their prison stints are over, Baton Rouge's WAFB9 reported. So according to The Advocate, there were more than 6 hours of testimony from 11 different witnesses before the sentence was read at the 20th District Courthouse in Clinton. Sorry, my elbow bumped something. Both Sheila and Clay reportedly cried, claiming they could have done more to change the outcome. Oh, you fucking think. Because she didn't just, quote unquote, melt into the couch and that just went unseen. I don't care how much she didn't want to be bothered. She wouldn't move. She'd have temper tantrums. She'd try to claw your eyes out. I don't care what was going on with her. You get her up and you wash her. You take care of, this shit is what pisses me off. Quote, of all the things I can say about this case, the one thing that keeps coming to mind is that Clay and Sheila Fletcher continually chose the path of least resistance when it came to the care of their daughter, District Judge Catherine Betsy Jones said in the courtroom. Per The Advocate, Lucy's parents had testified that their daughter refused medical attention. The 36-year-old was found dead in her family's home in Slaughter on January 3rd, 2022. She'd been under the supervision of her parents, who acted as her caretakers. On Wednesday, prosecutors argued that due to Lacey's mental state, she was unable to make the decision to refuse medical treatment. Exactly. Lacey had been diagnosed with autism and was nonverbal. In court documents obtained by The Advocate at the time, authorities said Lacey's body was covered in maggots, ulcers on her underside, and fecal matter crushed into her face, chest, and abdomen. A coroner stated her weight had gotten as low as 96 pounds and that her bones were visible. She also reportedly tested positive for COVID. A Louisiana coroner ruled that Lacey died from acute medical neglect inflicted over a period dating back to at least 2010. So 12 years, guys. 12 years. They just decided, okay, well, if she doesn't want us to take her to the doctor, we're just not going to take her then. I don't accept that. I don't accept that. Let's see. Sheila and Clay previously pleaded no contest to a reduced charge of manslaughter. Quote, we can argue about whether or not this process took 3 months, 6 months, or 3 years. I don't really care, Judge Jones said just before announcing their sentence, per The Advocate. This was a tragedy. The truth is that Lacey laid on a couch and slowly died because she got no medical or mental health care. Hear, hear. After sentencing, District Attorney Sam Dakila, D'Aquila, is that Dakila, said he and his team of prosecutors respected the judge's decision. Quote, we hope the community receives the message that this type of behavior is not going to be tolerated. Watch out for your friends, talk to your neighbors, and make sure this does not happen to anybody else. It's something that could have been prevented. And I say 100% could have been prevented. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. I'm trying to get through these because there's quite a few. Our next article comes from CNN.com. Title reads, a fourth former Mississippi officer is sentenced to 40 years in racially charged torture cases. Oh, goody. There's two men here. They just look like basic dudes. Dark hair, beards, mustache, just normal dudes. Jackson, Mississippi. A fourth former Mississippi law enforcement officer who pleaded guilty to torturing two black men was sentenced to 40 years in prison Wednesday as accounts of the horrifying brutality of a self-styled goon squad of deputies gripped a federal courtroom. Disgusting. A judge imposed the harshest sentence so far on former Rankin County Sheriff's Deputy Christian Dedman, saying he committed the most, quote, shocking, brutal, and cruel acts imaginable, end quote. Details of a nightmare of racially motivated beatings, torture, sexual assaults, and even a mock execution in January 2023 unfolded for a second day as victims came face to face with their tormentors, and each of the rogue former officers was sentenced for what the FBI director described as atrocious acts of pure hell. The emotional sentencing hearing Wednesday afternoon, under heavy courtroom scrutiny, focused on Dedman and his sexual assault on one of the victims. An officer with the U.S. Marshals Service told people in court to keep control over their emotions, saying the hearing would be highly contentious. Dedman was part of a squad of white Mississippi law enforcement officers who raided a home in Braxton without a warrant, subjected the two black men, Eddie Parker and Michael Jenkins, to racist vitriol, used tasers on them after they had already been handcuffed, beat them with various objects, then shot Jenkins in the mouth. All six former officers pleaded guilty in August to federal charges of conspiracy against rights, deprivation of rights under color of law, conspiracy to obstruct justice, and obstruction of justice. They include Daniel Opdyke, his fellow former Rankin County Sheriff's Deputies Dedman, Hunter Elward, Jeffrey Middleton, and Brett McAlpin, and former Richland police officer Joshua Hartfield. Each of these deputies resigned or were fired. Wow. For the first time this week, Parker spoke before the judge, giving his victim impact statement at Dedman's hearing. He told CNN before the hearing, quote, "I have to, because Dedman was the most abusive one." Quote, "That night I saw the devil come for me," Parker said in his impact statement as he wiped away tears. "I saw the devil in my face, in my home, where I was supposed to be safe. What did I do to get this? Nothing." End quote. "He tried to take me, man," Parker said, wiping away tears. Opdyke, the third former Mississippi law enforcement officer sentenced this week, earlier Wednesday, received a 17-year prison term in another highly emotional hearing. At Opdyke's sentencing, his attorney pointed to Dedman as the, quote, "guy who had this demented sexual perversion." Two other former Rankin County Sheriff's deputies, Elward and Middleton, learned their fates Tuesday. Elward, who shot Jenkins in the mouth, was sentenced to 20 years in prison and gave an emotional apology to the victims in court. Middleton was sentenced to 17 and a half years in prison. The final two defendants, Hartfield and McAlpin, will be sentenced on Thursday. In addition to their federal charges, the six defendants also face a bevy of state charges for which they await sentencing. U.S. District Court Judge Tom Lee, a seasoned jurist, has navigated this emotionally charged case with a calm, steady demeanor and in a precise manner. He has granted the defendants' attorneys the opportunity to present their case while ensuring they maintain respect for the victims. In court, both the attorneys and the victims appear to be attuned to the judge's nonverbal cues. When sentencing the defendants, Lee said he has to take into account what the community and victims deserve. So a professor at the Mississippi College School of Law told CNN that Lee is very respected in the Mississippi legal community, is known to be a fair and considerate judge. He is willing to make rulings and move cases along. He is a man of impeccable character and is honest, humble, and forthright.
I definitely want to know what happened.
Federal prosecutors said Dedman, 29, organized and participated in countless missions and was not at all afraid to use excessive force. Countless missions, more than one. Despite his relatively young age, he had the experience not to do what he was doing and hid behind his badge and gun. His acts are egregious, serious, lawless, the prosecutor said. Dedman's family was present in the courtroom. Some cried and closed their eyes as prosecutors recounted his conduct. The disgraced former deputy addressed the court before sentencing, but unlike the three ex-cops before him, Dedman did not address the victims directly or make eye contact. Quote, the lies, the pain I caused them, I will never forgive myself for. If I could take everything back, I promise that I would. I got into law enforcement, not as a devil. I really wanted to make a difference, Dedman said. Well, it's interesting to me because I don't think racism just, like, happens. Like, you're okay and you understand that racism is absolute, complete dog shit. And then all of a sudden you just wake up and go, oh, I've decided I don't like this race, whatever. That's not how that works. Let's see. After the hearing, attorneys and relatives of the victims praised the sentence. Quote, this is a remarkable and historic moment for the state of Mississippi and the United States of America and victims of police brutality and police abuse, the victim's attorney told reporters. So, people are saying that he is oppressive and sick. Federal prosecutors described him as the most sexually perverted of the six former officers and subjected him to the most egregious sexual acts. So Melvin Jenkins, the father of Michael Jenkins, said, I've lived in Mississippi 68 years, and I've never seen justice like this. He thanked Judge Lee and said the sentence was something unheard of in the state, and that is pitiful. The former deputy pleaded guilty in August to federal charges of conspiracy against rights, deprivation of rights under color of law, conspiracy to obstruct justice, and obstruction of justice related to the incident. I'm kind of going through because this is a super long one. Youngest officer breaks down in court. I don't understand this herd mentality. It makes me think of is it the Stanford experiments, you know, where they took people and half were prisoners and the other were guards and that nonsense. But I just have a hard time believing that I would ever fall for that. Maybe it's the NPCs of the world that fall for that, people that can't truly think for themselves. It's an interesting thing. Why do you think some people are absolutely unable to keep from just following the herd? Instead of standing up, you know, like, leave me a comment. Let me know what you think about that. You know, is the peer pressure really that bad? I've never felt that way. But maybe because I'm neurodivergent, it's just different for me. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, so he deserves to rot in jail. Moving on. The next article, I guess it's just going to be racism again. Coming from the NewYorkPost.com, title is Escaped White Supremacist Inmate, an Accomplice, Still at Large After Idaho Hospital Ambush. Because Idaho is freaking hopping almost like Oklahoma, in my opinion. A lot of stuff's going down in Idaho. Authorities are searching for a white supremacist Idaho prison inmate and an accomplice who fled after the accomplice shot and wounded corrections officers as they were transporting the inmate from a Boise hospital. According to police, said Nicholas Umfenauer is suspected of shooting two corrections officers during Wednesday's ambush in the ambulance bay at St. Alphonsus Regional Medical Center. It's not funny. I'm not laughing at the news story. I'm laughing at myself. A warrant with a $2 million bond has been issued for his arrest on two charges of aggravated battery against law enforcement and one charge of aiding and abetting an escape. Oh, he is a looker, guys. Okay, yeah, he looks scary. His head's all shaved. But, you know, like, I don't want to make fun because, obviously, I know about genetics and people can't help when they lose their hair, right? So I'm only making fun of him because he's a dick. Okay, but like, of course you're going to have to shave that hat, that head that far back to make up for that receding hairline. And I'm saying that only to him and the rest of you bald men, you own that shit. Kings own that shit. Okay. Anyway, he and inmate Skylar Mead drove off early Wednesday after the shooting in a gray 2020 Honda Civic. with Idaho plates. It's not known where they are or where they are headed, police said Wednesday evening. Oh yeah, he just looks fantastic. Three corrections officers were shot and wounded during the attack. Two, allegedly by this man, and one by responding police. So that one would be the accident. Officials described Mead, 31, as a white supremacist gang member. Mead was sentenced to 20 years in 2017 for shooting at a sheriff's sergeant during a high-speed chase. The attack occurred at 2:15 a.m., as Idaho Department of Correction officers prepared to bring Mead back to prison. Department Director Josh Tewalt said during a news conference Wednesday afternoon that Mead was taken to the hospital at 9:35 p.m. Tuesday after he engaged in, quote, self-injurious behavior, and medical staff determined he needed emergency care. So one officer shot by the suspect was in critical but stable condition, while the second wounded officer had serious but non-life-threatening injuries. The third injured corrections officer also sustained non-life-threatening injuries when a responding officer, incorrectly believing the shooter was still in the emergency room and seeing an armed person near the entrance, opened fire. So can I put a side note in here, by the way, because I know there's a lot of hate on cops. I mean, I literally just read one where the cops were like the evilest piece of shit, right? But I think that we all know that most cops are good, right? And these are people, just pretend you're a cop for a minute, okay? I was just talking to someone about this today because I have my vehicle and I need to, for whatever reason, the two front windows are not tinted, but like the back two and then on back are tinted. And so this person was telling me, you need to get these windows tinted, and I need to. It doesn't matter. The point is that they were saying, why can't we tint our windows as dark as we want? Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, if I were a cop, okay, walk with me. And you have to pull someone over because that's your job. You know, they're driving like a complete ass on the road and there's like infants and cars and stuff, right? We don't want anyone to die because some stupid meth head can't not do meth. Okay, all right. So then you have to pull them over. That's your job. You're trying to keep people safe. And you walk up there and the tent is so dark, you cannot see through that window. I know every time I pulled someone over, I'd be absolutely terrified because it's a roll of the dice every time. It's not like a percentage. Well, you know, you pull 10 people over and 9 of them are good. Oh, I'm only on number 8. I'm fine. That's not how that works. Every new person is a roll of the dice and I would be terrified all the time, you know? So, you know, it's like, I don't know why I get on these things, but the point is, it says, back to the article, sorry, this brazen, violent, and apparently coordinated attack on Idaho Department of Corrections personnel to facilitate an escape of a dangerous inmate was carried out right in front of the emergency department where people come for medical help, often in the direst circumstances. 5'11", 160 pounds, has brown hair, hazel eyes. I assure you he does not have brown hair on his head. But one picture he did have a beard. And hazel eyes. Detectives have confirmed he is an associate of Mead, police say. Attempts by the Associated Press to reach Upfenauer through social media were unsuccessful. Mead, 5'6" and 150 pounds. Oh, never mind. I was thinking that was someone else. This is our guy. Face tattoos with the number 1 and 11 for A and K, the first in the 11 letters of the alphabet representing the Aryan Knights gang he affiliated with. Yeah, so photos released by police showed an A and K tattooed on his abdomen. I don't see his abdomen. Anyway, so yeah. Crap. Makes me so mad. Okay, that's it. But I do have to find one more. So I have someone, and I don't want to out them, that emails me a lot of news articles. And so I'm trying to look through one. This is going to be the little bonus one for them as a thank you for sending me the good stuff. Okay, I'm back. For you, that was a snap of the fingers. For me, it was like a minute and a half. Okay, so this is our final one. This comes from the New York Post. Title is, Dad Jailed for Repeatedly Calling Kids School to Gripe About Too Much Homework. We need a funny one, right? An Ohio dad landed in detention behind bars this week for repeatedly calling his kids' school to complain about too much homework. Adam Sizemore, 37, was charged with telecommunications harassment and menacing after phoning his child's school several times, warning the principal at one point that he, quote, better put his big boy pants on, leading the school official to fear violence. You better put your big boy pants on. When the school stopped taking his calls, Sizemore directed his tirades at the Oxford Police Department, the outlet explained. Here's a picture of him. I would put his mugshot, if I could add pictures to the podcast on Spotify and Apple and all the places you listen, if I could put a picture on there, I would, because this is great. Adam Sizemore, look him up. Adam Sizemore, S-I-Z-E-M-O-R-E. I'm not laughing. It's the face he's making in the picture. Anyway, when the school stopped, yeah, we got past that. He calls dispatch, I think it was 18 times, roughly, Oxford Police Detective Sergeant Adam Price said. Sizemore can be heard on audio recordings becoming frustrated that the dispatchers will not tell him their names. When a dispatcher refused to directly connect him with the police chief, Sizemore lost his patience. He can come to my fucking house. I pay for him. He can come to my house, he snapped. Dispatchers eventually sent a team of officers out to speak with Sizemore, who was taken into custody while on the misdemeanor charges, the news outlet reported. He can come to my house. That's the end of the article. That's a great one. I like that one. Suggested high violence when, if you see him, you'll see incapable. So that's it. Yeah, we're starting a new week. I try to give you this pep talk every week. And sometimes I think, God, they don't want to hear that anymore. But then, you know, sometimes people say they actually help. So yeah, we're starting the week and it's going to be a good one. In the Northern Hemisphere, we're warming up for spring. I've got a greenhouse going. Actually, I've been taking a lot of little bits of footage, so I'm going to try to put a vlog thing together for you guys. I know a lot of you really enjoy those. And of course, I'll put that on the YouTube channel. But yeah, you know, I've got my greenhouse going. I've got my vegetable starts. The green bean starts are looking great. I hope you guys are getting some kind of vitamin D outdoor stuff. Plant something, grow something, you know. Tomato plant, put it in a pot. Put it outside. You can put it on your balcony in your apartment. Grow something. And trust me, you'll feel like, oh, it just feeds your soul. For you weekend workers, again, we love you. We appreciate you. Your sacrifice does not go unnoticed. I hope people tip decently to people working weekends. Like at restaurants, I know the whole tip situation is kind of a touchy subject, but I do try to be a good tipper because I understand working with the public and how much that sucks. So, yeah, I guess that's about it. I hope you guys have a great, great week. We've got another podcast coming towards the end of this week. It is very, very disturbing. This one's going to be a wholly disturbing one. So it's going to come with a pretty big disclaimer, but it has been a rough one to research, even for me. But outside of that, everything's great. I hope you guys are doing good. Love you guys so much. Behave yourselves, because remember, mommy doesn't have bail money. Bye.